I'm Bay, and you're listening to Bay Baltimore, a weekly pop culture and society podcast recorded in a quiet neighborhood in Baltimore, although there's an idling light rail train sitting outside the building right now, but it's still relatively quiet. Okay, thanks. Anyway, so this episode, I want to talk about Netflix's The Sandman. I'm sorry, I got distracted. Netflix's The Sandman. I haven't watched the entire series. I'm only going to talk about what I remember reading from the Audible book, which I know both the Audible book and the Netflix series is based off a Neil Gaiman comic book series that was from the middle 80s to early 90s. It ran from the middle 80s to the early 90s. So I'm going to talk about that. But first, I want to circle back around to Issa Rae's latest offering. This show is good. This show is good. It's so good. So I ended up watching episode 4, even though this weekend was bananas because it was my hubby's birthday weekend. And I'm back on my chapter stuff. I was doing Greek stuff this weekend. I'm going to be doing an aspect of Greek stuff this weekend. But then also this coming weekend is going to be wild because my siblings are coming into town. So God is good. Anyway, God is good. It's just so fortunate to be able to just party with your siblings, just to hang out with your siblings and continue to bond, build adult relationships with your siblings. There's nothing like it. And if you haven't really spent the time to develop an adult relationship with your sibling, you're missing out. And listen, I understand if there are circumstances that prevent you from doing that. I understand that. But if there's nothing if it's just a situation of maybe you guys didn't grow up in the same household, or maybe things were weird when you were teenagers. You did grow up in the same household, but maybe things were weird when you were teenagers. Take the opportunity as an adult to at the very least have conversations, because just try, just try. The worst that could happen is that things are exactly as you thought as you imagined they would be, and then you move on. That's done, right? But try. There's something about building with someone that you have common bonds with, that you've had common bonds with since you were a child. Maybe you didn't have time as a child to really work on those because adults, right? Like, number of different reasons why, but like, if you have the ability to do so, try it. If you don't have siblings, this is just another opportunity to make adult friendships that are like blood family. Just try. Those friendships that something happened and y'all been friends for 20-something years and now you're not talking, circle back around. Just circle back around. These relationships are important. Circle back around. If it's done, it's done, because everybody is in your life for a season. It's true, even siblings. People are in your life for a season. If things just can't be repaired, they can't. But don't let it go out. Don't go out like that unless you've actually tried your best in this moment, right? That's all I'm saying. Anyway, I just thank God I have the opportunity to build an adult relationship with some of my siblings. Anyhow, but moving on. Anyway, I'm just going to have a couple of wild weekends. But that's going to be okay because, I haven't had a whole lot of time to just enjoy. Now, mind you, we are still in the middle of the pandemic and monkeypox is still a thing. But we wearing our masks. We all have our vaccine. We washing our hands. We're trying to be as careful as we possibly can. For realsies, not for play, but for real. But God is good. It's going to be a while. It's going to be a wang dang doodle this weekend. Anyway, but I digress. So, but back to Issa Rae's latest offering. Somebody already mentioned this, but I'll say it here. The way that they depict 20-somethings using social media is perfect. Because, oh my goodness. So since I've become a resident of TikTok, and I've begun to spend my time there to the point where I'm on there half the time. I'm on there so much that the person tells you to take a break, if you've not been on TikTok long enough, consecutively long enough, for you to get a message that pops up, depending on the type of videos you watch, a specific type of take a break video will come up. For me, it's a black woman. It's mostly a black woman. Mostly a black woman with long straight hair, who's a creator, who's probably some big time creator that I haven't even bothered to pay attention to her platform. But she's probably some sort of wellness guru or something like that, or she meditates or something. Anyway, there's a black woman that comes on my page and says, hey, you've been scrolling for a while now, or some junk like that. Go take a break. There's a couple of times where there's been a black man who's popped on, again, another creator that TikTok has tapped to help you take a break. And he's like, hey, but he's totally different. His vibe is totally different. He's more boisterous and loud. He's like, hey, and funny. Go take a break. You need to drink you some water. Go take a stretch, do something, and then you could come back. And then on a rare occasion, there have been a white queer couple who's come on. But that hasn't been often, because I've been curating my, I try to predominantly support black and brown. Native TikTok. I'm on native TikTok, but just as like a cousin, if you will, because my family swear up and down that anyway, I'm black and I'm black American, so you already know where I'm going with the story. Anyway, but I'm like a cousin or an ally, although I don't do nothing. You know what I mean? Like, you can't say you're an ally if you don't do nothing. I guess I share content, which is something, but like in real life, I need to actually do some work in the native indigenous community here to like really share that I'm an ally, because people be throwing that word around and that's not for real. So I'm on native TikTok as like a cousin. Black TikTok, of course, because duh. I'm on book TikTok because duh, I be reading. And I'm part of, I support the book initiatives that are going around Baltimore. One of these days I'm gonna talk about the woman who got a grant from, I forgot where she got this grant from, but she literally sets up guerrilla libraries. Like, she's a guerrilla librarian, meaning she sets up little library hatches, little shelves all over the city. She's got like a grant to do it. Anyway, it's cool. It's actually cold-blooded, but anyway, and she gets the neighborhood kids to paint this. Anyway, I'll talk about that at another time. But anyway, so I'm on book talk. I'm on painting talk. I'm also on ASMR talk because duh. And I think it's just so fascinating because you can engage with people from all over the globe. There's a Russian guy that I follow. I don't think he probably can't speak too much English, but it's not about that. In ASMR, like half the time it's not even about what they're talking about. It's literally about the sound that they're producing, what they're doing. And so anyway, I'm also on, so in ASMR, there's a whole bunch of different people, and there's a different creators. And there's this one creator, she's a black woman. I think she lives in Florida. She wears color contacts, which I forgive her for, because it's not that you wear color contacts, but it's the type of color contacts that are like, obviously not your eye. There is something dollish about them and I don't like it. But like, if you wear color contacts and you've spent the money to have them blend into your face, then do you, because they probably, you could probably see the eyes a little bit better. The irises and all, not the irises, but the pupil better. And it's the pupil being non-dilated. Like, I want to see when you're looking at somebody's eye, when they get excited, their pupils get large. When they're excited, scared, their pupils are large. When they're mad, their pupils are like tiny. You know what I mean? And so when you got contacts on, especially those ones that are like stark colors that literally you just got it from like a store, but not like from an optometrist. Even an optometrist, you don't really get the range of your pupil changing because you have the stationary object that has a sink, that has a hole that doesn't change for your iris, for your pupil to be. But it doesn't really change as pupils normally do. You know, low light, your pupils are huge, humongous. When your eyes are dilated at the optometrist office, they're like biggest saucers. But, you know, when it's too much light, your pupils are like pin drop size. They're like the size of a pin, the tip of a pin drop or a pin needle, whatever. Anyway, but yeah, so like naturally I'm a person that likes to look you in the eye, and I notice those little things, and most people do, for the most part. But for me, it's unnerving because I'm a person that enjoys eye contact. And so it's unnerving for me not to see your pupils dilate or just change. And then on top of it, like it's not, you haven't gotten it from an optometrist. And so it's just a little creepy to me sometimes, these colors, but that's my bag. That's my burden, not anyone else's. But so anyway, so I follow her, this particular creator, because she's a little unorthodox. She also be tagging people when they, like when they come in her comments and are trolling her, she like gets them. And I'm like, there's something satisfying about that. When you're watching a live and somebody just X is a troll. There's something satisfying about that. Anyway, but she also does this weird thing that creeped me just creeped me out. Initially, it creeped me out, but now it's just cool with it. Because again, it's TikTok and you could literally do whatever. Why not be creative? There's these things. I'm calling them baby alive because I don't know any other way to be. I don't know any other way to call them, thing to call them. But she has these doll babies that look like real babies, but sleeping. Sleeping real babies. And one of her doll babies, she said the name of him, but I cannot call the name. I can't recall what she said. But one of these babies is dressed like a chimp. It's like, not dressed like a chimp. It's like a chimp. Like Planet of the Apes. Like a Planet of the Apes baby. Which apes is not a chimp. But you get what I'm saying. And initially, it creeped me the heck out. And again, it's the color contacts, because her preferred choice, I think, is blue. But it's like, and it's really weird because you think that this color is unnatural. And for the most part, maybe it probably is. But that one, remember I was saying that I followed this one ASMR creator from Russia? I think the way he sets his lights and the color scheme gives an illusion. I think his eyes are blue, but because of the lights that he sets, it's like it's dim wherever he's producing his show. And so anyway, I'm thinking he's got a graphic behind him, like a TV or something, some sort of monitor that is playing something in the background. But the color scheme is always like a blue green, like an aquamarine sort of blue green. And it's clear that he has lights behind him, just like soft light behind him, but then soft light in front of him while he's creating the sounds. And anyway, when you look at his eyes, they look, this has to be a trick, because aquamarine blue is not a natural color, but he makes his, something about, he probably, well, no, because I see his eye, his pupils dilating. Anyway, people do a lot of tricks with their eyes, and sometimes it's cool and sometimes it's not so cool. But I just love the creativity that these artists create. And again, who cares what they're talking about unless it's like harmful to a person, right? And for the woman that I was talking about, the only person she's harmful to are trolls, which who cares? But anyway, I'm always curious whether or not the foreign nationals that I follow are like racist or not, because I don't know what they're saying. There's a piece of me that does that, but then it's like, you know what, until proven innocent until proven guilty. But anyway, so why was I even talking about that? Oh my gosh, why am I talking about TikTok? Oh, talking about TikTok. People, since being on TikTok, there's a lot of young creators. That was my point. Whew. Anyway, it'd be rough sometimes. Just pray for me. Anyway, But getting back to Issa Rae's show, I did watch episode 4 of her latest series on HBO Max, which, by the way, I will talk about HBO Max and Disney Discovery. But anyway, there's something interesting about seeing generations on TikTok and the creativity there. But specifically, when you're thinking about the young creators, and it's not to say that this isn't on IG. I just don't spend any time on IG because IG is pointless to me. Why do IG when you could literally go to TikTok, when you could literally go to Twitter? That those mediums speak to me better than IG does. That's just the way it is. And everybody, I'm on Facebook because it's obligatory at this point, but like I don't spend a lot of my time there. I spend a lot of my time on Twitter and TikTok, and more so TikTok than Twitter. But anyway, whereas on TikTok, I typically only see content from people in and around my age group, still Black TikTok or Twitter, but it's in and around my age group. For the most part, there's some outliers, but for the most part, it's in and around my age group. But for TikTok, my timeline is intergenerational and I love it. I vacillate, but for the most part, I stay on BookTok, Painting Talk, Film Talk. I be on Film Talk too. Let's not front. ASMR Talk, and then all forms of Black Talk, and I be on Native Talk, like Indigenous American Talk, That's really it. And anybody else who, but that's not to say that anybody else that has a passion or is connected or is in that community or is a cousin too, tends to be on there as well. Like they come in and out, but that's predominantly where I'm at. Church, Black Church Talk, but that's part of the diaspora. Anyway, so all forms, when I tell you all forms, I'm talking about queer Black Talk, church, Black Church Talk, like all forms of the diaspora for the most part. I am on cinema, Black cinema TikTok, ain't I? Anyway, so getting back to my point, a lot of young people, the young creators that I've seen, they're really open about just about everything. Now that's not to say that folks in my generation and folks in the older generation or in a generation above mine, are not open. It's just the young folks tend to be a little bit more open. And I have seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. Yes, I've seen the party shots where people are out and everybody making, rushing to use the latest sound to illustrate a point or just be really funny. But I've also seen where there was somebody who used a sound and she was talking about something that it just put stuff that you wouldn't normally think you should put on TikTok or like on social media to begin with. You wouldn't even tell in a group, like unless the group was your immediate family or something like that, or your trusted allies. They put everything out there. And so to watch Issa Rae's show Rap Shit, and to see the way that they use social media for like the good, the bad, and the ugly, I think is representative of what I see on TikTok. And so I'm a fan of this show completely. I'm rooting for this show. I want it to do well. It's also because I'm on the different talks. Am I on Latinx talk? I guess I am, as a cousin too. I guess I'm there anyway. Anyway, so a lot of the generations, my generation, so millennials and Gen Z are talking about Rap Shit. More so the millennials are getting into it, whereas the Generation Z is like all about it. They're keeping up all about it, and they're very responsive. They're responding well to the series, like I was hoping that there would be a good response, and so this is good. Now, mind you, it's just my side of TikTok and all the little communities that I frequent, so that who knows, but I think it's pretty representative of her audience for the most part. And so yeah, I'm I'm so excited for this show to continue to do well and have multiple seasons. Here's the thing, though. Everybody understands that it was announced, I think last Wednesday? It was the latter half of last week, where HBO Max and Discovery Plus shared that they were going to merge. There was going to be a merger. Now, mind you, what does that mean? It means that two companies have decided to become one. And usually what that in order to do that, one company is buying another. And so in this instance, it's like a promissory note or something like that. There's a promise that Discovery Plus is going to buy, or whatever Discovery Plus's parent company is, whatever, Discovery, is going to buy HBO Max and take over their content. And just HBO Max is going to be a part of Discovery. And what that means for the content is that it's going to become Discovery's business to greenlight certain shows. And I read an article where Discovery was like, in the time where most people, even now as we are, people keep saying we're coming out of a pandemic. We're not out of it. We're still very much into it. But in a time where folks are more reliant on social streaming services than ever before, even though we're out and about, it's important to create quality content more than it is to create quantity, the huge quantity. And if you recall, remember in the beginning of the pandemic, Netflix to try to get ahead of the game was literally producing, maybe not the beginning, it was like midway in 2020, and then all of 2021, they were literally producing darn near a new piece of content every week. Darn near every week, which is an impossible schedule to keep up, because sometimes when you push out a lot of a large quantity of content, not all the content is going to hit. Have you ever watched a YouTube creator or a TikTok creator? Actually, TikTok. Let me use TikTok as an example. But YouTube, if you're not on TikTok like that, you watch a creator that is huge, has a huge platform, has like thousands of videos. If you go video for video, like in a week or in a 2 week span, if you just watch videos from a 2 week period in that creator's content creator's life, or that the life of that channel, or the channel in YouTube, the page in TikTok's language, all of those videos will not hit for you. Maybe one out of a, if they're producing content every day, whether or not they're recording it on each and every single day, like a video a day, or they're just binge recording content and then releasing it on a daily basis. Regardless, it's not every one of those videos is gonna hit. And that's the same concept that unfortunately Netflix ran into, which was they were creating content, or at least releasing content, like nobody's business. Like I said, almost a new piece of media every week, something like that, while they had our attention. And I understood the strategy. I understood it. Like, we got them, we gonna keep them, right? Here's the problem. It got old, it got boring, and you keep producing content. But like, all it takes is for me to watch one really bad show back to back, like a bad movie and a bad show or something like that, two different pieces of media for me to be like, okay, well, let me chill out on y'all for a while. And so that's a piece. But then the other piece is you keep creating this content and you've got similar characters turns me right off, because now I know you're just playing with me. And then also like similar features of the characters, you not even being creative at this point. So that is a turnoff for me, and I know I'm not the only one. So, like, lack of diversity in the story, lack of creativity, all of those things. And, you know, is what it is. Like, Netflix is not the baddie that it used to be. The Netflix of today is not the Netflix that ended Blockbuster. It's just not. It is what a TIST is. Now that they're not, now that TV corporations and movie corporations, Disney Plus, Discovery Plus, there's some other ones out there that I can't even name, but those two big ones. So of course, They're in the business of being able to take over. Let's not sleep on Amazon Prime, even though Amazon Prime is something like a Netflix 2.0, but like Hulu's out here just chilling, just kicking it hard. Hulu ain't bothered nobody. Hulu has never been in the top two, but it's been in the top four and five. You can be four or five and still make bank because everybody else is going to be paying attention to one and two. And right now, number one is not looking like Netflix anymore. Number one looking like Disney Plus, Discovery, Paramount. Like, they creeping up to one, two, and three. Ain't nobody studying Hulu, who's a solid four or five, but still making money and still making content. And their content is unique enough that you can get down with it. And it's also, they've got contracts with other different studios and TV networks that it can make, they play it the next day. So have fun, Netflix, trying to figure it out. Not to mention that Netflix is skyrocketing their, they're putting ads in their, moving to an ad-based platform now, or at least where they're adding ads to make revenue in the same time where they're increasing your subscription price. Or at least if you're watching it from multiple devices, more than the two in the basic plan, you're going to get charged more. So I know I'm supposed to be talking about the HBO Max and Discovery merger, but this is where we are right now. This is where we are. What was in is mostly out right now, and Netflix is kind of the thing that's on the outs. And so when you pull back to HBO Max and Discovery, the problem with this merger is that, or at least some of the creators like Issa Rae is saying, and some of the other big time content creators for HBO is, number one, I wasn't told about this merger. Number two, what does this mean for my content? Because HBO tends to be the place where, especially HBO and then HBO Max, was the place where it felt like a vanguard place where things that, how can I put it? You could be avant-garde, and you didn't have to go under rigorous testing. It's just you could have content that wouldn't regularly be on regular HBO, or you could have content that wouldn't necessarily fly on a Netflix. Netflix. But I don't know, just HBO has always, for me, held a special place in my heart because it felt like they produced original content that you wouldn't really see too many other networks. As evidenced by the myriad documentaries and shows I talked about over the years, most of the shows that are impactful to my life, the documentaries that were impactful to my life, they either came from, I watched them on PBS, not PBS, but PBS or KCPT. I watched it on KCPT back home in Missouri, or I watched them on HBO. Now, HBO Max just turned out to be just pumping out really good content of different things, like just stuff that you won't find anywhere else. Not but in this way. And so Issa Rae expressed the sentiment like, okay, so like she was joking when she was doing, but she's like, you know, she's kind of expressing the concerns that other creators had, other producers had, and certainly what other consumers had, which was, so what the heck does this mean? Because this doesn't, you don't think Discovery and hip, you don't use the word Discovery and hip in the same sentence. Discovery, I think the only thing that Discovery had was a content that I thought was interesting other than animal shows, like nature shows, is Discovery of Witches. But that's it. And I wasn't buying Discovery Plus to watch the whole thing. I only watched what was available, the free content. So who knows what this merger will actually mean? But here's the thing. Mergers can be announced, but that doesn't mean they go through. There's still a whole lot of steps that need to be taken before we get to the "and now we're merged" part, as evidenced by Elon Musk saying that he was going to buy Twitter. and him going through all the motions, and now he's stopping the sale of it. He's stopping the purchase of it, which you can do. Now, what ends up happening is sometimes, depending on what's in that initial agreement, you might lose out on some money if you don't move forward. But what's a couple hundred grand to people that are worth $1 billion, or to corporations that are worth a couple of $1 billion? Like, what's $100,000 to them? Nothing, or not much. It's like $100 to the average Joe, or maybe even $1,000 to the average Joe, but still, that's nothing to, actually, it's not $1,000, it's more like $100, but that's nothing to them. Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing that we need to keep in mind, that this merger doesn't necessarily mean that it's the death of edgy content that HBO creates. But at the same time, this all might be a moot conversation, because it actually has to happen, which mergers don't always happen. Sometimes they do. Most times they do. Many times they do not. But it's not a guarantee that the merger is going to go down. So anyway, yeah, but so I'm hopeful that Issa Rae will be able to continue multiple seasons of Rap Shit. I will say, though, that the trajectory that this thing is on, I don't know. I can't see it having more than like 3 seasons, because there's going to be a point where, like, it's fresh and new right now, and we're at the beginning of these women's rap career. There's going to be a point where you're gonna have to, like, next season has to one up this season, right? And there's still plenty of content, to still plenty of story to explore. If you assume that this is gonna go to what, 10 episodes, and we're already on episode 4, 10, even if it goes to 12, like, there's still plenty of content in this season to cover that will still leave plenty of room for a season 2, a season 3. Here's the thing. I just don't see that there being enough content for 4 and 5, a season 4 and 5. And what we know is that Insecure went off on season, was it 5? Insecure went off on season 5, because there's just a place where you've got to stop it. And so I'm hoping that, like Shonda Rhimes, Issa knows how Rap Shit's going to end. And so she's just got to get to it, because I just can't imagine them continuing to be so innovative for too many more seasons. Like, I don't know. Like, there's going to be a major death in the show, or maybe not obviously, but I foresee a major death in the show. I foresee what we even know in episode 5, that there's going to be more tension between Mia and the girl that raps, whose name I've forgotten. But anyway, the two lead characters, Shauna. Mia and Shauna, there's going to be some tension between Mia and Shauna. Obviously, there's going to be some tension between the relationships with the father of Mia's children, and the complexities there that they can explore. The relationship between exes who have a child together, especially a young child together. And then the complexities of long distance relationships, that's going to come up, but you can only do that for so long. And it can only be so big of a part of the main story. The main story is them getting put on. And so season 1 is them coming close, keep coming near misses with stardom. And obviously the ending, I would hope that the end of season 1 would be them about to get put on. Season 2 is them being put on and growing their career from there, right? And the ups and downs and the twists and turns of them, and the near breakups or the actual breakups. There's going to be a point where Mia and Shauna break up for real. And then there's going to be a place where they come back together. Maybe that's an episode of season 2 where they break up, probably like midway in season 2. And then we follow the trajectory for a couple of episodes. Not too much now, but then and then there's a moment where they're still broken up in the next season, season 3, but they're coming back together. And then there's that love there. But like, we can't do this. I don't know, depending on which way the wind blows, I just can't see more than, there might be enough for an episode 4, but the way that Issa works, I just don't know that she wants to milk it for everything that it's got. I think she wants to put out good content. And to that, maybe 3 seasons, maybe a 4th, depending on if there's new people added. Obviously, there are going to be new people added, but We'll see. And I want to be able to see, is my point. I want to be able to see those next seasons. Cause I'm in there. I'm enthralled. I'm engaged. I'm in this show. It's so fun. It's a fun show. It's so fun. Anyway, but yeah, if the merger does go through, I hope they recognize the jewel that they have in the show. Issa has a whole market cornered. And I'm not just saying Black people of a certain age cornered. I'm literally talking about young people, middle-aged people cornered, not just in the African diaspora. Literally, she do got the diaspora, though. In this one, she's got the diaspora on lock. She got the diaspora on lock. Anyway, but she also has cousins of the diaspora on lock as well. And so if they were smart, I would keep her content. I wouldn't mess with her content at all. Because what she's touching is gold. Because she's tapping into something that is new and fresh, which you can only get when you not only engage creators from different backgrounds, but literally culturally different backgrounds too. It's the only way that you can get that fresh stuff, but whatever. It's not just about being younger, but it's about being nuanced and fresh. It's nothing to do with age has its place. Age has its place, but nuanced and fresh. And let's be honest, HBO, while it's avant-garde, a lot of its content is very, very shades of beige. So I would hope that if this merger does go through, that we wouldn't lose the little color that we do get from HBO. But anyway, I digress. I want to slide right into, because I don't want to do what I did last time, because I talked for like 40 minutes about everything else. But it was so important for me to get this out about Rap Shit and then talking about the merger and what that might mean, because it's so fresh and new. But then slide right on into talking about The Sandman. Now, remember, I have not watched this whole thing because it's a lot of content. But I can tell you that I am a Neil Gaiman fan. I think he's imperfect. He is not a perfect writer. But I'm a fan of his work because I'm a spiritual person. Number two, I'm into mythology. Number three, I'm into Afrofuturism and Black mythology. And while Neil Gaiman is a white European male, his creativity is not limited to European-based mythology and content. He wrote a story that I thought was beautiful about Anansi. He wrote American Gods. He wrote Anansi voice. Depending on where you're from, you might pronounce it Anansi boys, Anansi or Anansi boys, which is a very great book. It's a good book. If your introduction to Neil Gaiman is only American Gods, and your introduction to Anansi as Neil Gaiman writes him is American Gods, you're missing out. Anansi boys is bomb. It's hands down bomb. And it's bomb because he's done his research. It's bomb because he's taken care with it in the writing of it. As much care as he wrote with his other books, right? Even with American Gods, although my problem always comes when the TV adaptation of Neil Gaiman books, the TV adaptation, the Hollywood adaptation of the books, because it just gets so dumb. And very weird. Like, you're literally talking about mythology. These characters, again, but it's my complaint about Hollywood in a nutshell, which is you're literally talking about fantasy, yet the only people you're casting are beige. Like, you're talking about fantasy. These people can look like whatever. Whatever. You can't stand on the lie that, oh, these are famous actors and I'm going after these particular actors because they have name recognition. Because many of the actors that they lean on for a lot of these adaptations don't have huge name recognition, or at least they're not international. So your excuse is null and void. It don't make sense. So if we're talking about mythology And I think the thing that is curious to me is because I can't tell you exactly why I'm drawn to his books, other than it's incorporating two of my favorite subjects, which is spirituality and mythology. And I think that's literally it. And he's creative with it. That is literally the only reason why I'm a fan of Neil Gaiman. Not to mention, he's, like I said, with the Nancy Boys, he took care, real care, in writing that book. It was good. It was good to me. If you haven't read it, you need to, because it's real good. it's not Afrofuturistic. It's literally about, it's a modern interpretation of what the trickster god in Nancy. And the trickster, I don't even want to use the term trickster god because that feels limiting, but the character Anansi, the African myth, the myth about Anansi, and it's not necessarily a myth. There's a belief in Anansi too, which again goes back to the spirituality piece. But read Anansi Boys. It's interesting to say the very least, and you learn about Anansi, you learn about the history there while you're also reading this fantastic story. Literally fantastic in the terms of it blends from the spirit realm to the earthly realm, and there's conflict there, and it's really good. And so anyway, when you interpret really good films, really good books, you got to be careful. But what we know is that sometimes the film adaptation does not live up to the standard, the same standard of the book. And here I am talking 40 minutes. I'm going to slide into the next segment, but I guess I'm going to leave this for the rest of this conversation for the next segment, which I'm talking about, all about Anansi. I mean, not Anansi, but The Sandman. But I think The Sandman is doing okay. From what I remember listening to from The Sandman audiobook of Neil Gaiman's, because that's another reason, that's another way that I read so many books. I'm listening to them and I'm reading. I'm listening to some, I'm reading others. So anyhow, let's talk, because I really think if you have not watched this, even though I just derided Netflix for not being that girl anymore, it still does occasionally produce really good content, and I happen to think that this is one of the pieces of content that's really good that it's produced. Now, mind you, this could literally have gone on Discovery Plus, but anyway, this could have come out on HBO. Netflix happened to get the bid, but anyway, well, we see what happens when network TVs get a hold to his product. It's not always great. Like Lucifer was not my, that TV show was not my thing. It wasn't. It was way too pale for me. The cast was way too pale for me. Like, I know you threw in a couple of brown faces and all of that stuff, but like, it was still way too pale for me. And the depiction of Lucifer was a little, it wasn't strong enough for me. Well, I don't know. Maybe that was Neil Gaiman's, because Neil Gaiman was a producer on that show. So maybe he liked that interpretation. That wasn't my bag. But American Gods, the first season was cool. I had a lot of problems, especially the way that they portrayed Papa Legbo and his love interest. Like, it was so wild to me. The lengths that they will go to not include women of color. You just got the one where they have multiple opportunities to engage. Like, this is the film adaptation. This is the problem I have with TV and movie adaptations. The lengths that they will go, and I said I was going to finish, but I'll say it this way. I'm going to continue this discussion in the next segment. But the lengths that sometimes these network TV stations will go to to exclude women of color unless they are a certain shade of beige is wild to me, because they really go far. And so I'm saying not all the TV adaptations of Neil Gaiman's books are really great, as evidenced by American Gods, because it started off really strong and then I feel like it just kind of went left kind of hard. And it just didn't work out for me and a lot of people, but there were really great moments. They messed up when they got rid of Orlando. Oh, anyway, we'll talk. Anyhow, but stay tuned, because I got a whole lot more to say about, I am going to get to The Sandman. Again, I haven't watched the whole thing. I'm trying to push through, but this is a lot of content. It's a lot of episodes, and the episodes are long and meaty. So I'm going to talk about as much as I can. I'm going to spoil a few things if you don't know anything about the story of The Sandman. I'm going to spoil them, so just know that now. am going to keep talking more about the TV and film adaptations of Neil Gaiman's work that I've seen. All right. So next segment, Sandman and some other stuff. Okay. So remember how I told you I hadn't watched the whole season and I probably wasn't going to get to it before talking about the show? Well, I lied. I had the opportunity to watch all 10 episodes because the nature of my show is, if you don't know, is that I tend to record this thing over a series of days because I'm just a busy bee. And so anyway, I need to let you know a couple of things. So yes, I did watch the entire thing. So I have more, a richer discussion planned, or at least a richer conversation, which is the same thing as discussion, but I'm not talking to anyone. What I mean to say is I have better commentary to provide. That's it. And the other thing that you need to know is that I've already recorded this once, but baby, I fell asleep while I was recording. When I tell you, have you ever been listening to someone and they were falling asleep while they were talking to you? Their words began to not make sense after a certain point. And that is exactly what I have an audio representation of. I recorded 47 minutes of a conversation and of me talking. And about when I hit the 40 minute mark, is when things went downhill. Maybe the 37 minute mark, things began to go downhill, but then they picked back up again in the last 2 minutes of the recording because I did something simple. So first thing is I'm recording from my phone. And so it's easy for me to kind of walk around. I tend to pace a lot when I'm recording because it's just a good use of my, I'm trying to stretch and things like that anyway. So when I'm walking, I'm also doing these weird hip movements to wiggle my back and my lower back and all of that stuff. So I'm able to do all of that. But sometimes I am seated because I just need to sit down. Well, when I was recording this thing, I was recording it at night, and I decided not only did I want to sit down at a certain point while I was recording it, but I laid down. And that was the biggest mistake of my life because I was already asleep. And so you can hear me, of course, I'm yawning a ton, right? More than I would usually yawn in these things. But then I start to not make sense. There's a point in which I start talking about something, a thing, an artifact in the series that Dream really wants. And I think I'm talking about the artifact. I'm actually talking about an outfit that I planned to wear, that I hadn't planned to wear before, but I'm going to wear now. I don't know how that came out to be, but I literally start talking about an outfit that I want to wear this weekend. I don't know where it came from. Call it a subconscious. It's like one of the conversations that is consistently playing. You know how you always are thinking about other things while you're doing something else. And so you put a pin in it. I know I'm not the only one. You put a pin in it and you come back to it later. Well, apparently, the sleepier you get, the harder it is for you to compartmentalize those two things of you. And so are those two aspects of your brain. And so I began to say out loud what I was thinking while instead of talking about the show. It was wild. And I got it on record. And maybe I will release a piece of it, because when I tell you, I was talking about that shirt, that it's a combo. And I'm going to do it this weekend in the outfit, but that wasn't the point of the show. So anyway, I had to get rid of it because that was just too wild. And I said more than that. Like, I kept yawning a million times, but then I also kept not making sense. And I kept talking about that stupid outfit. So, and then when I realized, girl, sit up because you're asleep. I think at one point I actually fell asleep for like a second, for realsies, because I do that and tried to play it off like I wasn't asleep. Anyway, so I had to nix that. So I'm back and I'm going to hit this thing and quit it because it's bright and early in the morning. I got things I need to do. So let me go on and give this the respect that it needs. And hopefully I won't meander a lot, but you know who I am. And so the possibility of me meandering is pretty high. But let me tell you this. So the Sandman, let me get into the particulars first. The Sandman is a one season drama, but it is going to have a second season based on how it ended. It's 10 episodes in this season. The first episode, or at least the entire binge, the entire series premiered on August 5th. So by the time you're listening to this, it was last Friday. It was released. It was adapted from the comic book, The Sandman, as I already shared before, on Netflix company. The network is Netflix. The language is English. Program creators are Alan Heinberg and David S. Goyer. Neither of these people am I familiar with, but also what you need to know is executive producer. Among the executive producer core is Neil Gaiman himself. And one of the things that I stand behind is if, for the most part, if you have the source material creator as part of the show from the start to finish, or whatever you're creating from start to finish on the project, the likelihood of you getting it right or doing the source material justice is higher. And so I always like it when Neil Gaiman is a part of his shows, even if some of them, like American Gods, kind of fall flat in some of the representation sometimes. His book, though, was in my opinion, pretty awesome. There was something that was a little bit, I couldn't quite put my finger on it. There was something a little bit homophobic. I guess you can't say homophobic light, can you? There was something that was a little bit troubling in American Gods when it came to the djinn. In the book, the depiction of how the djinn experienced pleasure was weird to me versus how the djinn experienced pleasure in the show, which in the show adaptation I thought was better handled than it was in the book. But anyway, we're not here talking about that. But anyway, so for this, so I've already told you how many episodes they're in. Let me get to the characters, and I will do it this way. If you Google The Sandman right now, do not look at that cast list because it is not accurate. It's accurate in that all of these people appeared in the film or in the series, but not everybody who's listed here. This list does not include everybody who appeared in the film, especially this one particular actor who plays a major figure in, actually was hinted to the entire time. Her bloodline was in the film or in the series from the very first episode, but she's the last three for sure. The last three episodes she's in, but she's not even listed in this cast list when you look at it on Google, which makes me think, who in the heck is creating this cast list? Like, IMDb is good for something. I don't really trust their ratings, but they are good in terms of listing who all is in the production. And so just ignore this cast list because the people who are top billed aren't the ones that you need to be paying attention to. Although I will say Tom Sturridge is Dream, right? So let me go in the order of people that I'm going to talk about. So Dream, you've got Dream, you've got, hold on, let me get the rest of it. Dream is a supreme being that is not as supreme as God, but very much supreme. He is the ruler of his own kingdom, and his kingdom is the dream, the dreaming. He calls his kingdom the dreaming. And he has siblings, Death, who is played by Kirby Howell Batiste, who, again, I don't know her work, but she's beautiful and she's played by Death. She is one of the black women I'm talking about that is more represented or provides that representation. Dream also has Dream, Morpheus, the Sandman. Those are all of his names, but in this adaptation, his primary name is Dream. So that's Dream's sister, Death. Dream has another sibling, and at this point they're not super gendered, so I won't even go there. And here's the train hollering at somebody who's probably in his way or in their way. Anyway, but so I've just introduced you to Death, who's played by Kirby Howell Batiste, And I will introduce you to now to Mason Alexander Park, who plays Desire, who is another one of Dream's siblings. And then the final sibling that we meet here in the show is Despair, who's played by Donna Preston. So what you need to understand, and well, I'll say this. Gwendolyn Christie plays Lucifer. Gwendolyn Christie, you know her from Lord of the Rings, not Lord of the Rings, but what's the name of that? Not Lord of the Rings. It was an HBO show with dragons. Oh my gosh, it's gone. Hold on, let me look at her thing and see if it says. Oh my gosh. Game of Thrones. Oh my gosh. Why did I? Anyway. So she was on Game of Thrones. And she plays Lucifer, which is in this series, but not as a recurring role, but doesn't spend a lot of screen. Doesn't have a ton of screen time until you get to the latter episodes of the series. Again, this 10-part series. And Boyd Holbrook plays Corinthian. Oh my goodness. So I'm talking about this. Okay. So let me just say, so I've already introduced you to the Dream, Death, Desire, and Despair. Let me tell you what they represent. Dream, Death, Desire, and Despair are physical manifestations of what humans experience, aspects of the human condition that we experience. So we all dream, and dream has a purpose. Dreaming has a purpose in our waking life, but also in our when we go to sleep, when we're resting. Death is a thing that we all experience at one point or another. Either we physically experience it ourselves, we physically experience ourselves and we experience it through other people. Despair is a thing that we all experience for one reason or the next. And desire is also another thing that we experience. And one could argue that dream, death, desire, and despair are all intermingled and intertwined, which is why in this context, they are siblings. They are all, but again, they are all aspects of the human condition. And they're very important to this whole thing because all of them have this whole story, because these people are physical manifestation. These people who have these names are physical manifestations of these things that all humans experience, and they have their own kingdoms. And in having their own kingdoms, they have jobs to maintain those kingdoms, and people and minions and servants and things like that who are supporting them. They also literally have, because they are beings, their whole being isn't their job, which is to cause despair, desire, death, or dreaming, but it is a job of theirs that it is their responsibility to oversee. And so Neil has given these, and through this adaptation, Neil has given these siblings a rich life, but their life revolves around their job. And so anyway, so if you think about these characters that way, then it makes sense how the Sandman could be caught in the situation that he's in, which I will get to in a moment. But the Sandman is the keeper of the dreams. He's Morpheus. He's Dream. And he has a realm that all humans visit when they rest. And so in order to maintain his realm, he has to create the good things and the bad things that we experience in a dream, right? And so he goes about his business, and he's a severe person. He's portrayed as a severe person that takes his job very seriously. And while all of his dreams that he creates aren't nightmares, he does create nightmares. And we get to know one of the nightmares that he creates. We actually get to know a few of the dreams that he creates, but definitely we get to know intimately one of his nightmares. And his nightmare is Corinthian, which is played by Boyd Holbrook. And we'll get back to Corinthian in a second. But all of these characters in here have a purpose. Well, not you understand, the ones that I'm talking about are have a big purpose, a big impact on the story of the Sandman. And so Gwendolyn Christie is Lucifer, which comes into play toward the end of the series as a way to help Dream achieve certain goals. Dream must go through Lucifer in order to do it. But Lucifer, being the creator of lies and malcontent, is trying to use Dream to their advantage at any point. But yeah, I don't even think I'm going to spend too much time talking about Lucifer. But what you need to know is that, but I will talk about this next person. Charles Dance, who was also in Game of Thrones, plays Roderick Burgess. Burgess is extremely important in a little bit, but I'll get back to him. The other person that is extremely important that I'm glad the representation is there. I'm glad that, I assume Mason Alexander Park is either queer. They are in the queer spectrum somewhere. And so I appreciate that. And talking about Black women as important to the story. So I've already introduced you to Kirby Howell-Baptiste, who plays Death, Dream's sibling. Now I will introduce and Mason Alexander Park, who is Desire and Dream's sibling. But I'll introduce you to Vivienne. I think her last name is Phonetic, and so it's Achiampong, who plays Lucien. Lucien is, for all intents and purposes, a librarian, but also Dream's left hand, right hand. I'm left-handed, so left hand. Anyway, and very important throughout this series. And one of the reasons why I get so frustrated by, you know, looking at the cast list from places like Google is that she is literally in almost every single episode of this series, yet she is listed way toward the middle of the pack of people that are introduced. And I understand that perhaps the algorithm props up people who are mentioned more, if you Google, either people who are mentioned more in media, and so they're listed top billing, or that they are more famous than other folks, because I recognize that these are predominantly English actors, and I'm only familiar with, if I'm being 100%, well, mostly English actors. If I'm being 100%, the only people that I'm familiar with are Gwendolyn Christie, David Thewlis, Charles Dance, Mark Hamill, Jolie Richardson, Stephen Fry. And that's it out of this enormous cast. This is an enormous cast on Google, and you know it's even larger if you look at IMDb, but those are the only people that I'm familiar with. I'm not even familiar with Tom Sturridge. I have no idea who he is apart from Dream in this series. So I can imagine that in the UK, maybe some of these actors are a little bit more famous than most, even though what we know is that Boyd Holbrook, Patton Oswalt, and Mark Hamill are American actors. I know Mark Hamill is extremely famous because he played, what is it, Anakin Skywalker? Anyway, I don't even know why Boyd Holbrook would be famous. He did a good job as Corinthian in here. But anyway, I digress. Let me get to the story. So the story is, and the, at least the genesis of this story is what I remember from the audiobook or the audio play, which was, remember I told you, the Sandman's job is to create dreams, manage dreams in his kingdom. And in doing so, he creates nightmares and he creates fantasy dreams, like the good things and the bad things that humans experience when they come to his realm. And so he creates a nightmare that is Corinthian, who he created so well that Corinthian becomes, has a mind of his own and goes, instead of staying in the dream world where he's supposed to, he grows strong enough to be able to cross into the living world, the waking world, and begin to create problems in the waking world. He is a nightmare So this nightmare does what we think nightmares, what nightmares threaten to do in our dreams, right? So he causes mayhem. He causes mayhem, for lack of a better term. You have to watch it to understand the type of mayhem that he creates. But anyway, so in the beginning of this thing, we are in Sandman is going. He leaves the dream world, goes to the waking world to get Corinthian, bring him back home. And it's at this moment he finds Corinthian, and he's got his helm. It has got his amulet, and he's got his raven, which is his companion. There's something about I'm missing something in the mythology about ravens and them being even in Game of Thrones, birds were used as an extension of another person who had certain abilities. And so ravens here also have that significance. And so Dream, when he goes into the waking world, he's got his raven as a guide. He's got his helm as for protection, and his amulet also for protection. His ruby amulet for protection. And so he's out, and oh, he's also got a little bag full of sand. Because duh, what would the Sandman be without a little flare? So he's literally got a bag full of sand. And what we know is the old story is that the Sandman will sprinkle a little sand on you to make you go to sleep. I remember that being a part of a story that was told to me at one point. And that's why you go to sleep. When I was a child, I remember that. But anyway, and it wasn't told by my parents. I think it was told in like some daycare or something like that. Anyhow, so Dream is in the waking world going to get his creation. And simultaneously, while he is going to gather his creation, we are introduced, while he's doing all of this, we're also simultaneously introduced to a figure that is meant to be a rival of Aleister Crowley. Look up Aleister Crowley. He was a practitioner of the occult. O-C-C-U-L-T. So Aleister Crowley, it makes my skin crawl, but it's Crowley. A-L-E-I-S-T-E-R. I think that's how you say it. Who you spell his first name, and then Crowley, C-R-O-W-L-E-Y. Very scary dude, in the spiritual sense. But Charles Dance plays Roderick Burgess, who's supposed to be a nemesis, or at least someone who's trying to prove that he's better at the occult than Aleister Crowley. And so he has this group. If you remember, you know, the Nazis were occultists, I guess that's what you call them. And so anyway, I don't even know why I brought that up. It's just to say, it's just a fact that was a part of that regime. Anyway, so Burgess is a leader of this group who practices the occult, or dabbles in the occult. And, he's at present, we meet him at night. Sandman is out trying to capture his creation at night. We meet him at night at his mansion. And we learn very quickly that the reason why he's assembling his group, and certainly while they're, I don't know what the genesis for him creating this group and getting into the occult, becoming an occultist, was because of this very important fact. But the reason why they were assembled on that evening was because Burgess wanted to summon Death, to trap Death, again, Dream's sibling, to trap Death, to make Death resurrect his son who he lost in the war. And now I don't remember the time frame on this, but I could only imagine if it's 1900s, it's probably the 1919 or something like that, around one of the First World War or something like that. And he lost his son in the war, and he wants his son back. Now, mind you, it's not his only son. It's just
his favorite son. He lost in the war and he wants him back. And so he's assembled his group together to summon death so that they can trap death and make death bring his son back. And unfortunately he does it by using the grief of another person who's a part of his group, with promising him, this man, the hope that if you bring me this other little piece that will allow me to finish, for us to complete the chant and the ritual, that will bring your son back too. And so it's at this moment where you just take a moment and you recognize that Burgess is probably a terrible dude, and he's about to do a terrible thing, but for a reasonable purpose. He's about to do an irrational thing, which is trap death. Because what did you think was going to happen? You literally thought you were going to trap death, and in your arrogance, you were going to make death come to heal and do your bidding. There's a lack of knowledge that act portrays, because you assume that in that moment, that Burgess is kind of assuming that death is an entity like himself, and that death can be persuaded. And you know, the grief maybe drove an already arrogant man to higher heights, perhaps. But anyway, so in this moment, he thinks that, yeah, we're about to do this because I want my son back. And so they begin to do the chant, and one of the things that happens is, what we come to understand is that in order to trap one of these siblings, that are the physical manifestation of everything that humans experience, they literally have to be on the same plane. So in order for death to do death's job, death has to come into what Morpheus understands to be the waking world to usher people to the afterlife. So in probably in death's world, in death's view of this, death comes to the living world and is able to walk freely among the living in order to usher the dead to where they need to go. And so the idea is that Burgess is going to conjure death, because death is surely on this plane, because death is ushering someone to the land of the eternal living all the time. And so the idea is that while death is out here doing their work, that he's going to snatch him. And so they begin to do the spell. And remember, I told you, Dream is also in the land of the awake. He's in the waking world to go get his nightmare. He doesn't often do it, but when he does, it's because he's going to get a nightmare that's gone rogue. And so it's at this very moment, while Dream has taken out his sand and in very dramatic fashion is not taking out his sand. He's pulling sand from, he's breaking Corinthian down into sand, because that's how he created him. Kind of giving a nod to, from the dirt you were created and from back to the dirt you will go when we die. And you get the sense that as Corinthian is dissolving, he's going to be sent to, not back to Dream, the dreaming as Morpheus's kingdom, the Sandman's kingdom, is called, but he's probably going to some sort of punishment. You get the sense that maybe he's going to hell, because they reference hell here because of Lucifer. You also reference God here, which means in this universe that both hell and heaven exist, as well as these other realms exist in this ecosystem. And so anyway, the exact moment where Dream is disappearing Corinthian to wherever Dream is sending him, Burgess and his people are making the chant, and midway through Corinthian disappearing, the Sandman, Morpheus, Dream begins to disappear himself, and he dissolves, and he leaves Corinthian to run amok, and Corinthian's excited that he hasn't been disappeared, and he goes on about his business. And Burgess has conjured dream in a little diagram that is meant to capture him. And he does so. He captures him and he then incapacitates him. And then in incapacitating him, he takes his helm, he takes his bag of sand, and he takes his amulet, this glowing red amulet. And then he proceeds to try to do what he said he wanted to do. He thinks again, he thinks he has conjured death, but he's actually conjured his dream. And so he begins to try to blackmail what he doesn't know is dream. He thinks he's blackmailing death into returning his son to him. But I don't even remember how he finds out that he's dreaming, not death. But anyway, Burgess finds out that he has the wrong person and decides to try to, I think they have a conversation. Maybe? Yeah, I don't exactly remember why he understands that he's got the wrong person. But he tries to blackmail him all the same, trying to get him to bring death to him, which obviously he doesn't do. And when he recognizes that he won't be able to get his wish, he literally just takes the amulet, takes the helm, takes the sand from Dream. And then because Corinthian learns that Burgess has captured his maker, he has a vested interest in Burgess keeping him trapped forever. And so he tells Burgess to put Dream in a glass capsule that will really make it so that he will never escape, because this diagram that they've put him in, the diagram is in paint or whatever. And so the minute that the plane is ever broken, Dream will be able to get out. And so let's make it even harder for him to get out. Put him in this glass something or other so he really can't. It'll be harder for him to get out. Plus, make sure that nobody falls asleep in his presence. So have him always on guard, 24-hour guard, and make sure that none of the guards ever fall asleep in his presence, because that's how he can get in. We'll be able to get out by using the people in their dreams. And so anyway, and this is how the Sandman is imprisoned. He's imprisoned for a century. And in that time, Burgess, because he has his amulet, has found a way to live darn near forever. And so we speed past it. So the audio story and the Netflix series kind of diverge here, because obviously you have to do a little bit more things visually than you might have to do in a story, in an audio story. And so what we know is that every year, well, I don't even want to do all of that. The only reason why I brought up Burgess is to let you know why he got trapped. Long story short, you have to watch it to understand how Dream gets out, but he definitely gets out because the plane has been broken and he's able to bust the glass and get out. And then he goes on a quest to get his helm, to retrieve his helm, his ruby, or his amulet, and his sand. And in doing so, we're introduced to other characters that, because they have access to Dream's very powerful things, wild things happen to them. Like somebody has a sand and the sand prolongs their life. All of his items end up prolonging the people who possess them, their lives. It gives them immense power, but that power comes at a cost, because those items were designed for Dream, not for anyone else. And so what those things end up doing is corrupting the people. Yeah, which is a metaphor unto itself. But anyway, and so Dream goes on a quest in the first half of the 10 episode series, retrieving his helm, his sand, his amulet. And then in the second half of the series, once he's retrieved all of those things, and there's something very interesting that happens with the amulet that is actually kind of cool. The second half of the series, harkens back to what happened when Burgess actually captures Dream in the first place. So when Dream is captured, he's not overseeing his kingdom, which means he can't keep his kingdom in order, which also translates to dreams run amok. And so what ends up happening is people who were asleep at the point at which Dream was captured, they can't wake up. In the series, they can't wake up, and there's this thing called a sleeping sickness that everyone falls under. In the audio version of this story, which is, again, all of this is based on the comic book series, so all of these adaptations are probably a little bit askew, but nevertheless, they all have Gaiman's hand on them as executive producer. And so anyway, in the audio version of this thing, not only do people not wake up, but some of those folks who are awake can't fall asleep. And so they literally succumb. They die because they cannot go to sleep. What we know is, in the real world, sleep deprivation can lead to death. Sleep deprivation and also hunger and all the things, because what we know is that our body repairs itself when we go to sleep. Our brain shuts down like it's supposed to. It's like running a motor for too long. And so sleep deprivation, not only can sleep make it seem as if lack of sleep at a certain point makes it seem as if we're drunk or we've drank a lot and we've drank to excess, but it can also lead to our death for a number of different reasons and shut down of a number of different things because our brain isn't working appropriately. And so in the audio version, people actually die because they can't go to sleep. Now, I recognize that they probably didn't want to go that deeply into it in the series itself because there were just other things that it needed to explore. And I'm okay with that creative decision because in the audio version that made it super scary to me. Yeah, because if the dreamer can't control your dreams, can't usher you into dreamland, you can't go. And if you can't go, then you become delirious and then you become ill and then you die. And so that's not what happens in this audio series, but nevertheless, you know, the world is impacted by Dream's capture and not being overseeing his dream world. When he gets released, his kingdom is in shambles. And so in addition to going back and getting all of those things that Burgess took from him, he also is repairing his kingdom on the way as he's building his strength back. So as he gets the items that are meant to be his, the sand and the helm and the amulet, he grows in strength each time he gets one of these new things. And so as he grows, he's able to rebuild his kingdom. And Lucien is by his side the entire time. And it's just an interesting dichotomy that they have, because what Dream comes to know is that he really does need a helper. He needs someone who he can trust to mind the kingdom while he's gone, because one of the reasons why his kingdom was in shambles is because when he came back is because he left it in no one's charge, and so everything went amok. So there is, in the second half of the show, there is a person who is introduced as an orphan who's been taken in, and they now are a late teenager, like an older teenager, and they've created this family around them of people of their choosing, but they've been separated. This person is called Rose. Rose has been separated from her brother because of something, just some terrible thing, and you got to watch it to know. But Rose herself, because of some thing that was missed when Morpheus was imprisoned, Rose becomes a danger to humanity. And Corinthian is hopeful that she does, because Corinthian doesn't want to go back to the dream world. Corinthians, or the dreamland, or the dreaming. Corinthians doesn't want to go be banished to hell like Morpheus could absolutely banish him to. Corinthian wants to be running amok. He wants to create his own kingdom in the waking world. And he's actually already created this cult around him that is pretty dastardly. It's pretty gross. And I think here's the other thing.
Hold on. I don't want to go. I'm going to stay on course. And so he's created this cult. The point at which Morpheus catches back up to Corinthian, it is gone amok, and they even have a convention. And you got to watch it to know what I'm talking about. But anyway, everything comes to a head because Corinthian is trying to manipulate Rose into thinking that Morpheus is a terrible person and is just trying to kill her. But in trying to turn her away from Morpheus, he's also trying to get her to destroy the world and to merge the dreaming with the waking world so that he can continue to live on in this new reality. And so there's a big moment where the big bads come together and, you know, there's going to be a season two. So that should give you a clue as to what happens. But if you want to know what happens, you actually got to watch the thing, to know it. It's really good from episode one all the way to episode 10. There are some loose ends in there. And there's one critique I do have, which is for all of the diversities that's in there, there's something pretty unbelievable that happens with Rose. You have this black teenage girl who's created her own family, but literally the only black people that we see her with that are a part of her friend group, unless I'm missing someone, the only black people in her life are her siblings and her grandmother, which she doesn't see but for a little bit. It's just weird to me that everyone else it's just weird to me. This whole aspect of chosen family is a little bit tone deaf because your chosen family literally only includes white people. That feels odd to me. Or there's a few black people in there, but like, it just feels odd to me that the majority of your chosen family, even the ones that will help you escape to your new reality, trying to help you find your brother, are only white. That feels foreign to me. That feels weird. Feels very weird to me. I understand they were trying to create some multicultural stuff, but multicultural isn't just black and white. Multicultural includes other cultures. Like, where was the... There were, I will tell you this, Cain and Abel, the biblical Cain and Abel were represented by, I don't know, they were a part of the Asian diaspora. Two brothers that were, maybe they are brothers, people who looked similar to each other, who were part of the Asian diaspora. So, okay, I'll give you that. And there were a few Asian women or women who were part of the Asian diaspora who were in this show, but they were like few and far between. They were like big characters. The richness that is, if this thing was set in the UK and the United States, and what we know is that both of those countries have a lot of people of color in them, a whole lot of people of color in them, and so close but not close enough, and close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. I just wish they had more people of color shown, because it's a fantasy. Weirdo, like, come anyway. I'm not gonna go there, but anyway, the show still was really good. It was very creative. There were some loose ends that I just didn't understand, like why Constantine was there. I really don't know. Like, they had a place, but it wasn't. I don't know. I just it felt like there were ends that were put in here that weren't tied up appropriately. But it didn't matter because the main story was still so intriguing. I will say this. So I understand why. Oh, and I didn't even go through the rating of it. My bad. I meant to do that. So IMDb had it at 7.9 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes had it at, say, 86%. Or I did go through part of this. But what I wanted to say is Google users had this at 93%. 93% of Google users who rated the show liked it, of which I am one. I like the show. It is between 86% and 93% in that realm for me. The show overall was pretty good. It had its flaws, as I've already kind of mentioned, but it still was very good and worth watching. And again, anything that has the source material, any adaptation that has the source material creator as part of the production team or the creative team is going to be good, or it's going to have a better chance for success. because you literally have the person there that created this thing that will tell you how to handle this unique situation, this new and unique situation that you're creating based on the history of this particular character, which will make it good. And so we have a lot of that going on in this series. I hope in the second series that it's a little bit tighter, that there are fewer loose ends, that you don't introduce so many characters that you have to hurry up and tie up in the like last two episodes. You know what I mean? Because that it feels rushed. You have 10 episodes to do some, and you do it in the last three. You end it in the last three. That feels, it feels a little bit weird. But nevertheless, it's really good. You should watch it. It's very creative. You should also read The Sandman. You should get into the comic books. And if you can't do that, listen to the audio version of The Sandman. It's really interesting. The soundscape is phenomenal. It's great. It's really great. And again, I just don't understand why critics would say that it was unfilmable. I just don't know why they would think it was unfilmable or an unfilmable series when In Dreams with Robin Williams exists, that Inception exists, that Interstellar exists. And all of these probably are not your cup of tea, but they all deal with high concepts that I just don't understand. Neil Gaiman books, his stories deal with high concepts. And we have the technology now. You just got to also have the right creative team around it. So anyway, I recognize that the comics were created in the late 80s, early 90s, and that some of the stories, or at least the subject matter of the stories, folks weren't interested in, you know, network TV and movie studios weren't interested in touching until the 90s or till the 2000s or late 2000s to 2010s. But I'm glad that it happened, because these are good stories that are meant to be portrayed. And I challenge the casting directors to push a little bit deeper to get more people of color in here, because Neil Gaiman's stories include nuggets and aspects of every culture, most cultures, I won't say every, most culture. And most cultures don't look the same to each other. So you need that representation. I just don't understand why it's difficult. It's not difficult. You just lazy and biased. Probably a little racist, but biased. And so we just need to open up a little bit more, because I imagine there would be some more, there were probably some more creative portrayals of some of these characters. I don't know. It's just, I want to see more diversity. I want to see more people from different cultures representing these characters, because it'll make the story richer. And you know it's going to make the story richer. Anyway, but yeah, so watch that or don't. I do think it though, it'll be worth your time. Anyway, so that's enough for now. And I made another 47 minutes, something or other, and I was awake the entire time. I think I only yawned once. So anyway, I hope you enjoy this episode. If you did not, I hope there are other episodes that you will enjoy. If you think someone in your friend group might enjoy this, go ahead and forward this show to them, this episode to them. Also, if you're really finding that you're enjoying yourself, rate or review this podcast. Rate it 4 or 5 stars, whatever you please, and leave a positive review. I will read it when I get to see it. But either anything that you do will ultimately help. If you share this thing, if you rate, review, and share this thing, it will help get this podcast into the ears of folks, of more folks, which will ultimately help me spread the reach of this show. This hobby that I continue to do, and I will continue to do until it's no longer enjoyable to do it, but it keeps me doing this thing that I love doing. So thank you so much for that. I appreciate you. I hope you have a good day or evening or whenever you are listening to this thing. Don't pay them no mind. Don't read that email, or read it and then respond to it and then keep it pushing. Don't take that work home with you. It's not that serious. Everybody makes mistakes. Get yourself back up and try again tomorrow. And be kind to yourself. Be kind to yourself. Be kind to yourself. Be kind to yourself. Because if you are kind to yourself, then you recognize what kindness looks like in other people. And then you will tell them how you need to be treated, how you want to be treated. And then you will hold them accountable to that, even if they go kicking and screaming because they want to jump your boundaries. Don't let them. They're your boundaries for a reason. Your boundaries are there to help you maintain peace of mind. Maintain your boundaries, dear. Okay. Well, that's it for now. Thanks for listening. Until next time.